Ryan Ryder here for Main Event Radio. On the line is Pete Gasparino, better known to wrestling fans as the Mean Street Posse's Pete Gaz. How you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. How you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you very much. Well, of course, you were part of the famous team, the Mean Street Posse. I'm wondering, how's Rodney doing these days, and how's Joey Abs?
Rodney's doing great. Joey Abs is doing great. Rodney's lives out in New Jersey now, and Joey Abs down in the sticks of North Carolina, but everyone's doing great, and still stay in touch time to time, not as often as we'd like, but they'll have separate lives, but we still try to keep in touch quite a bit.
Your match against Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe drew record ratings for Monday Night Raw. How does it feel to know that you were part of one of the highest rated television segments in wrestling history?
It just goes to show, hey, first of all, it feels great. It feels amazing. But it just goes to show that it's really entertainment, because we didn't know how to wrestle. We knew how to take a couple of bumps, but that was about it. We couldn't put together a match. But wanted so badly to see Rodney and I get our butts kicked from Briscoe and Patterson that the segment was one of the highest ever.
Was there ever any animosity towards you from other wrestlers having come in the way you did as friends of Shane McMahon?
Absolutely. I mean, no one would ever really show it. I mean, don't get me wrong. Not everyone was. There's a lot of guys that were able to open up to us and accept us, and but there's always guys that maybe not your face would show that there's animosity, but you know there is, and by the way they act, and then it takes so much longer for you to for them to open up to you and be willing to help you and stuff like that. But it was one of those things. I understand why it was those guys all paid their dues, and Rodney and I had to pay our dues in a different way. We paid our dues in the ring. A lot of these guys really beat the hell out of us, and at the end of every match, Rodney and I smiled and looked at our opponent and shook their hand. Wrestling is all about respect, shaking hands, and showing the common courtesy to your opponent since they're putting their life in your hands, and vice versa. So it was one of those things where we paid our dues in a different way, but in the end, by the time it was all said and done, we had earned respect in the locker room, which is one of the most important things about being there.
So you came in with the right attitude. You came in with respect for the industry and with respect for your fellow competitors. Did anyone in particular ever work really stiff with you guys?
Some guy named JBL, Brad. Yeah. I can't remember his name that well because he beat me in the head with chairs so many times, I can't remember. But yeah, those guys were a little stiff with us. One particular night on Monday Night Raw, he hit me in the head with a chair and literally wrapped it around my head. Kind of reminded me of a Fred Flintstone cartoon, since I kind of looked like Fred. But the chair kind of bent around my head and said, speak for itself, But again, look back. After the match, shook Bradshaw's hand, said thank you, and he actually told me months later that's the day I earned his respect, because I took it like a man and I didn't say anything and just killed a few brain cells.
That's kind of like the test for incoming tag teams. I don't know if you were around when Public Enemy came in, and after getting beaten up by the APA, Bradshaw and Farouk, they quit the company, and they were wrestlers. You guys were coming in as outsiders, and you took that beating like men.
Yeah. Yeah, our whole thing was, first thing was to not, because we were green, we wanted to, first of all, make sure that whatever we did, we didn't hurt our opponent. And, we're all trying to make a living. Our first thing was the health. We worried about, hurting them so much, but we would rather take the, injury than them. We wanted to make sure we protected them, basically. The next thing is to give the McMahons the best possible match that we can do, or best show that we can do, so we could obviously stick around longer. But they're doing something for us. They gave us an opportunity, and we wanted to make the most of it. So that was those the biggest things.
How awesome was it to be part of such an amazing era, the Attitude Era?
there's no word really to do it justice. There were many times, like in the beginning, we were part of the corporate ministry and going out into, we would be the first segment coming out and, the pyro's going off, the crowd's going crazy and girls flashing and all the stuff's going on around you. And you're kind of walking out and you're like, holy cow, this is, you wonder what it's like to be a rock star or something. I mean, that's pretty darn close to being one when you're out in that atmosphere. I was just glad to be along for the ride, to be honest.
What are your thoughts on the current product compared to the one that was around back in your time period?
Well, I think it's not that bad. It's totally different. I mean, you can't really go by. It's hard to compare now to then. There was a lot more rules and regulations. You got, it's a whole different rating now. It's a PG, is it PG-13 or something? But, the added terror was an animal of its own. I mean, I still at times go back and watch matches with my wife and watch old episodes of Raw on the network. By the way, you can get that for $9.99. I still watch them. And my wife's jaw drops when she sees some of these matches and the stuff that goes on and what we got away with out there. So it's kind of hard to compare. The bottom line is they're making money, and the product is getting better each week, and it's exciting, and it's more exciting for me because Max back.
Yeah, what was your reaction when Shane McMahon returned to World Wrestling Entertainment earlier this year?
All right, true story. I actually called Shane the day he returned to Detroit. I actually called him that day, say hey, and just do you know what with him. And when I called him, he was actually in the city, and he was delivering a guitar to his son's school. So we were talking and didn't think much of it, and got off the phone with him because he had to go to run the car into the school. And about 4 hours later, he's on the first segment of Monday Night Raw. So I called him. I told him he kayfabed me and all that other stuff, and we had a good laugh about it the following day. And he says, "I didn't kayfabe you because I didn't tell you where I was going next. You didn't ask." He wouldn't have told me anyway. He said, "That's true." He and I we kind of live our lives by the kayfabe, but he's annoying about it. Let's be honest. There's a lot of stuff that happens that he doesn't tell us what's going on, and it's been like that. We were kids and living kayfabe, and it just never ends with him.
Keeping the kayfabe alive. Do you have any maybe a story from when you were kids about when he had kept you in the dark?
Well, I'll just his wedding, for example. He got married Marissa back in it was 96 or 97, and the whole thing was in the city, and the wedding was at. Beautiful, the famous church. I can't think. Bradshaw killed a brain cell. But anyway, there were all these different events, and normally you get to a wedding the day before the wedding, you check in, and there's a rehearsal, and then and then maybe go out for a couple drinks, and then go get to bed early because you had a long day. Well, this was like we were for a Saturday wedding. We got there, I think, either Wednesday night or Thursday morning into the city. And everything we went, he wouldn't tell us anything, and he lied about every type of time that we had to appear at something. And it turned out pretty much most of Mean Street Posse, the original Mean Street Posse that was at WrestleMania, was his bridal party, and Vinnie Mac was his best man. So the whole bridal party basically showed up to every place an hour early, with no one else being there, like the rehearsal at the church. We were at got to the church. There was no one there. So we went across the street to a bar and drank and got shooters and all sorts of stuff and brought them back into the church. We were drinking in the church. We're all going to hell. but yes, that's pretty much how we. That's pretty much how he just always had something to do as far as kayfabe. He always just keeps things a secret. Won't tell us. Another time we took a buddy of ours to the Super Bowl. He was getting married, and that was his that was his bachelor party. And, of course, Shane says, hey, you know, I'm going to try to get tickets to a concert. He ended up getting us, it was like in a little hall. We saw Creed, and you know, he got us unbelievable seats for the Super Bowl. And it was all from
Connect. Awesome.
You know, from not, you know, it's always who you know, not what you know. So, but yeah, just those things, he just keeps you in the dark, and then you're on a need-to-know basis when the time's right.
Yeah, so you go back a long time with Shane McMahon. Any possibility of you returning to come and help Shane O'Mac?
I highly doubt that. I'm 46 years old. Not in bad shape. I'm not actually in better shape now than when I first started wrestling. But I don't see it happening. You know, I mean, you never say never in this business, but he just knows that he's known this. The day I got let go, I went to his office a couple days later because I was at the time in Port. They had me in Puerto Rico. I went into his office. I thanked him for the best 3 years of my life, and I told him, if you ever need me back or if you ever would like to have me back, you don't even have to ask. The answer is yes. So it's there. It's out there. It's been 16 years, or 15 years, rather, and he hasn't called yet for that, but I don't really anticipate it. I don't think it needs me. There's a lot of nice, great young talent out there. But like I said, if he ever calls, I'll be there.
It might be a surprise. He might just like tell you 10 minutes before.
That's exactly what he would do. He'd probably get me tickets to the match and then say, hey, no, actually, he did do that once. Not the same day, but the 15-year Raw anniversary.
Yeah, you were in the Battle Royal of that.
Right. I had tickets, though, with about 7 or 8 buddies of mine that I play softball with, and we had a whole night plan where we were going to start drinking and get some beers and then get a good steak dinner and then go watch the show. And, you know, we had all these plans, and then, you know, and I wasn't in any shape then. I'm in better shape now than I was then. And he calls and says, what are you doing Monday night? I said, I'm going to the show. You got me 8 picks. Said, want to work? Okay. He has actually, he's actually taken me up on it, but yeah, you never know. Anything can happen with Shane.
Yeah. So Ryan Ryder here talking with the Mean Street Posse's Pete Gaz. You were a 2-time WWE Hardcore Champion, part of that 24/7 craziness. Any memories of that?
Yeah, the memories are that this conversation to this point is longer than both title reigns put together. but that was a great time, though. It was so much fun. We were actually starting to feel more comfortable working wise, and yeah, there was a guy named Tommy Blanchard. He was one of our one of the writers at WWE at the time, and he kind of gave us some freedom to express ourselves and add some input. The match was huge, considering we'd only been it hadn't even been a year since we'd been in the business, and we were already having opportunities to you know, say, hey, well, what if we do this or what if we do that, and you know, and we would have a lot of fun with it, and it made it exciting. It was a segment that was on every week that made, you know, you never knew what was going to happen. It wasn't going to be a long match with a bunch of, you know, rest hold stuff. It was, you know, it was quick, to the point. There was some comedy involved, and it provided pretty good entertainment. So it's too bad, you know, I understand with the whole ratings thing, they don't want to do too much hardcore stuff, but that, it'd be fun to bring that thing back.
You never know. They're bringing the Cruiserweight Championship back shortly, so hardcore title can maybe be next.
Yeah, never know.
So why did you leave the wrestling industry?
I didn't leave the wrestling industry. The industry left me. When Vince took over WCW, like I said, I was in Puerto Rico. They had me. They had broken up the Mean Street Posse. We were, at the time, we weren't really on a storyline. And they had us, they originally told us to go back to Memphis, work on new gimmick, because then they were going to take us to, they were going to bring us back to the Posse and then have us break up. And then I was right up to days before I got released. I talked to a gentleman by the name of Dennis Brent, who lied to me, and told me that, you know, Shane is taking over WCW, and it only makes sense that his boys in the Posse joined him at WCW.
Mm-hmm.
So I was all gung-ho, and, you know, like I said, I had two character all built up in Puerto Rico, and then Paul Bearer.
Percy Pringle, yeah.
God rest his soul. Yeah, Percy. And he was there scouting, and he was checking on myself, D'Lo Brown, and Chaz, one of the headbangers who's on tonight, which I can't wait to see him on SmackDown. Came to watch us, and then he and I went into the crowd and kind of sat and talked for a little bit in an area where no one was. And he told me, he's like, I can't believe how much you've improved, you know. And so I was excited about that. And he said, you know, I'm going to give a full report, you know. And then, like, shortly thereafter, not much more than a week, I ended up getting released. And I know Percy, that wasn't smoke. That was just a numbers game where, you know, there was a lot of guys from WCW. There was a lot of their roster and the current WWF time roster. There were too many guys and only 6 hours of airtime. So some of the fat had to get snipped, and I got snipped. So, you know, it was one of those things. And there was really nowhere to go to after that. You know, we had been told, or I know I was told that I was going to be contacted by Dr. Death to go to Japan, which I was more than willing to do. And that fell through. I'd never heard from anyone. That was JR's saying or lying or whatever you want to talk about. So after that, I decided I was going to do some indie stuff to try to get myself out there. And then Jeff Jarrett was going to start a company. They were going to go to Australia for a couple weeks, come home for a week, and then go out to Europe for a couple weeks. And I was all ready to do that. And then 9/11 hit. Everything got pulled, and we never got to do any of it. So that's when I was like, well, yeah, I was still getting paid by WWE at the time, so I was okay financially. But, you know, I was like, I got to kind of grow up and get a real job again, you know, and that's what I ended up doing. So I've been doing it ever since.
Not long after that, Jeff Jarrett founded the NWA TNA promotion. Was there any talks with them about being a part of it?
Yeah, there was, actually. I remember, because what I did was I went to work on Wall Street after WWE, and I remember being on the trading floor talking to Jeff, and he said to me, he goes, Pete, I'd love to bring you in. He goes, but you know what you're going to have to do, right? And I said, no. I said, what? He said, you're going to have to badmouth the fans. And I said, he goes, how do you feel about that? I said, well, I don't feel comfortable with it, but I will... I'll talk to Shane and see what Shane says. And he said, you know, I'll explain to him, you know. And he's like, all right. And then never had that talk, never heard back from Jeff. That was kind of where I left it. So,
Why would they have forced you to badmouth the McMahons? They couldn't just bring you in and have you do your thing, maybe launch a new gimmick or put some new life into your character? Why was it that they wanted you to bash the McMahons?
That question's not for me, because I really don't know the answer to that, but I know that, someone gives you an opportunity, you don't turn around and stab them in the back. I would have had a very hard time with that, and something I wouldn't have done, without talking to him first, and I'm sure he wouldn't have been too thrilled about it, but, I just couldn't see myself getting to that point.
Was it a difficult transition from you, or a difficult time period leaving wrestling?
Yeah, and I don't care. I don't care who says it's not. They're full of shit. I'm going to curse on that one because it's a great lifestyle. I thought it was. I loved every day, every minute I was a part of it. I jumped out of bed every morning and couldn't wait to find out what I was doing that next day. I wanted to learn. I wanted to get better. I wanted to prove that I belong. And when that all gets taken away from you, kind of hard. The hard pill to swallow. You know, you go from people wanting to take photos with you and autographs, and you know, you go to restaurants to get free meals without, you know, just because you signed a couple autographs in a restaurant. Whatever the case is, you feel real special when you're doing it, and then all of a sudden it gets taken away, and it's like, kind of hit you, you know, and it's kind of like, the money, of course, is an issue. You know, like, jobs like that don't grow on trees, you know. And, I mean, considering how much your body gets beat up, it was worth every bit of it. I'd do it all over again.
You had mentioned the WWE Network. A lot of your matches are now on the WWE Network. Has that led to a whole new fan base for you?
Yeah, it's funny. Between that and Shane coming back, my Twitter kind of grew pretty quick, considering I really wasn't doing much on it. It's fun. You know, it's fun having people reach out to me, and I like the interaction and stuff like that. Some people are corny, and some people are rude, but it goes with the territory, and I just like to be rude back. So, good.
What's the worst troll you've gotten on Twitter? By the way, at I Am Pete Gaz is your Twitter.
Just guys being rude, just saying, you know, that, like, you'll get, it doesn't happen too much, to be honest with you. But every once in a while, you get a guy that, you know, very up, you know, wants an autograph, wants it sent to his house, wants it personally, you know, like, there's so many demands, and, you know, it just, certain things. And then, you know, if you say, you know, I don't have any more photos or whatever, then they get nasty, and, you know, they want, people just expect a lot out of you sometimes. You know, I try to be nice sometimes to people and send stuff out, and, you know, after a while, that post gets expensive. You know, like, if I send something out to everybody, you know, and I don't want to sound like a pompous ass because I'm far from it, but some people just be very rude and make rude comments and tell me, you know, what they, I guess, the way that makes them feel better. Their comment, which is fine. If they have their opinion, then that's fine.
Looking back, is there anything that you would have done differently in your wrestling career?
Anything I would have done differently? I'd have to say no. No. The only thing I wish we got to show the universe, WWE Universe, what we were, what I was like before I got cut, and how much improvement I had, and, you know, getting calls from Chris Benoit, and guys like Bradshaw, and guys like that saying that, you know, you can't, don't quit. Just, you know, there was no place to go. But even indie shows were shut down after 9/11. I had an interview with Vince Russo it was last November, and we were talking about things, and he kind of said to me, he goes, I feel like something's not right with you. Like, something's missing. And you know, I guess he's a psychiatrist because he did figure it out. There's just a empty void there where I wish I got to show people that, we got thrown into the ring from being on the street. We literally, from one day being on the street, next day in the middle of the ring, performing with the best athletes in the business. Vince McMahon took a chance on us, and it paid off 3 years. We gave him everything we had, so I don't regret any of that. If we had sucked and we didn't do anything well, then we would have been gone the next day. But he saw how hard we were working. He saw that we were improving. He saw that we had heat with the crowd, which was the most important thing. And that's why we stayed as long as we did. Some people it rubbed the wrong way, some people it didn't. But my whole thing was, I wish I got to show them what I could have really done.
It's truly spectacular the way that you came off from the streets, as you said, and to become successful. I don't know how many people would have been able to make that work and make it work for the amount of time that you guys did.
Right. That's the thing. It's kind of unique. I know it wasn't for the McMahons. We would never have gotten the opportunity. I know that, and as all of you do. But what you do with your opportunities, which is what's important. And Rodney and I took advantage of an opportunity, but we wanted to be good, not for ourselves, but for the McMahon. And we would drive city to city at night after matches and talk about how could we get better, how could we do this, what tape should we watch. And we would watch film, and we would, no, I literally, I was 285 pounds when I started, and I was built like an offensive lineman because I was one, and I got down to 240, about 240, 242, just by hard work and dedication and wanting to prove that I belonged, you know, and it was so much more to everything and getting respect in that locker room and all sorts of stuff like that. So it is a unique story, and because it's a unique story, it is in a book that I'm writing coming out this March. You'll get the whole story, a bunch of road stories, life on the road, which are funny as hell. Hopefully people go out and buy it and enjoy it, because I'm sure once someone reads it, they're going to, if you're a fan of the Attitude Era, you're going to have a good time with this book. It's something that really, really mentioned, and, you know, it talks about all the big name guys, fun ways, and everything that's going on. And a gentleman by the name of John Robinson, I don't know if you're familiar with him, he's written many books for WWE. He actually was interviewing me for the Attitude Era book when I gave him a couple of stories. I could barely get him to stop laughing. And he said, when he finally did stop, he said, you should write a book. And I told him I always wanted to. And he said, well, I'm going to finish this. He did a book on the Ultimate Warrior, which won an award last month, actually, as best best biography out of all biographies. It was like a Benjamin Franklin Award, something pretty prominent.
Wow.
Fan of awards, so he and I are writing this book. We have it; it's due in October. It'll be coming out on the presses. It'll be launching in March of 2017, and we're pretty excited about it. Cover's already done, and we're ready to go.
So the title of the book is "Looking at the Lights," coming out March 2017 by Pete Gasparino, Mean Street Posse's Pete Gaz. What else can you tell us about the forthcoming book?
Not only are you going to get stories about when Rodney, Shane, and I were kids, the original Mean Street Posse, there's going to be photos in there from our childhood, high school, senior prom, all that stuff. And then you got all sorts of stuff, great stories leading into that, how I don't want to give away too much, but how we ended up getting involved. One of the funniest things that people love is that when we originally started, Rodney and I were asked to do some vignettes. And then Shane had brought us to WrestleMania, a group of us. And then 10 days after that, Shane called Rodney and I back to the office. And we're sitting there, and he says, he's like, here, this is for you. And he handed us envelopes. And we had no idea what the envelopes were for. We're like, you know, what's this? And he says, getting paid. We didn't even know we were getting paid. We thought we were just doing him a favor. We were shocked that we picked up money for doing some vignettes and going to WrestleMania, and they put us up in a hotel, and we thought that was the greatest thing ever. You know, like, we couldn't believe on top of doing all that stuff and having a good time, we got paid to do it. So we were shocked about that, and that was, you know, looking back at it, and we still kind of laugh, like, he was paying us to do something that we were going to do for free. They could have saved some money.
Yeah, they didn't even have to pay you.
No.
Before we let you go, I'd like to know if you have any other funny road stories that you'd like to share with us.
Funny road stories. I got a good one. Rodney Abbs and I would drive, and that we would follow, we would drive with in another car, would test Prince Albert and Val Venus. And we would always get into these things where all of a sudden someone would throw something at the other person's car. And we'd get into this big, you know, on the highway, weaving through traffic, throwing things at each other's cars. So one night, after a show, we're driving, and Val, I'm in the passenger seat, and Val pulls up alongside. And telling me to roll the window down. And so I rolled the window down, and he said, pull over. He goes, your tire's going flat. So we pull over, and we knew something was up. And then all of a sudden, we start seeing this flickering of light in the front seat of the car on the passenger side. Yes, he had a lighter. So as soon as I saw there was a flickering, it was a lighter, I turned to Rodney, and I said, punch it. And thank God, because Test had lit a bag of shit. He took a shit in the bag.
Oh, my God.
lighting it, and they were going to throw it at us. You know, I would have got hit in the face with a flaming bag of shit. So, we took off. The joke was on them because when Tess was trying to shit into the bag, he missed it. He got it on the seat. I guess the whole car started to smell, and Prince Albert was in the back dry heating, and I think he even threw up. So, joke was on them. So, but yeah, it's just stuff that we used to do on the road, and just stuff. You know, that's the hardest thing about leaving is you miss those times like that.
Yeah, the traveling on the road with the boys. Did you do anything back to them, or the smell of the crap was bad enough?
Well, not that night, but you know, down the road, of course, we always got even and always did some stuff and had a lot of fun and just stuff like that. Like, yeah, there was a group of guys, you know, those three guys, Edge, Christian, they're the best. You know, like, I love those guys. I miss Test. I can't believe he's gone now for
way
a while.
Way too young.
For years.
Yeah.
Way too young. But, you know, it's that bond that you form with guys that as soon as you see them, like, you pick up and, like, it's old times. You really never miss a beat and you're busting on each other. So it's pretty good.
You recently made some appearances on the Edge and Christian show on the WWE Network. How was it like being back after all those years?
It was like I never missed a beat. In fact, it was a hell of a lot more fun. I shot 15, something like that, and that was over the course of 3 days of taping, over, you know, spread out a few weeks apart. But being there and joking around and making fun of Christian, and, you know, Edge and I would gang up on Christian and whatever, the last show we did, we ended up going out to dinner. It was me, Edge, Christian, and Funaki. We had a great time, went out to dinner in Stamford, Connecticut, and had a few drinks and had a blast. Good. It's fun to see those guys again, and we're looking forward to season two. And I don't even know when shooting begins, but they told me I'd be a part of it, so I'm looking forward to that. So it's something to look forward to, and we'll see what happens.
Pete Gass, thank you so much for joining us today on Main Event Radio. Any final word from you to your fans?
Yeah, just look out for the book in March. Like I said, the Attitude Era, good stories. If you're a fan of that era, you're going to love some of the stories, and you won't be disappointed, I guarantee you that.